Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Enjoy Success podcast, where we explore success, real success, defined as having a life rich in the things that matter most: happiness, gratitude, contribution, health, and love. We interview people from all walks of life, all different backgrounds, careers, ages, etc. But the one thing they have in common is that they have created an extraordinary life for themselves. And through their stories, insights, successes, and failures, you will see that regardless of circumstances, we all have the power to create a life we truly love. I'm your host, Jeff Fayetto, and if you're serious about your own personal growth and creating a life you truly love, this is the podcast for you. Enjoy Success is dedicated to bringing you the most holistically successful people on the planet, not only to inspire you with their own stories, but to share their secrets on how you can literally create the life of your dreams. So please make sure to subscribe to the channel so you never miss any of the episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Enjoy Daily. Let me ask you a question. Where are you on your priority list? If you're like most of us, probably not as high as you should be. As a result, we don't enjoy our days as much as we could. We've all heard people say, write down the things you're grateful for, or read something inspirational first thing in the morning, or surround yourself with positive people. But with all the challenges in today's world, adding anything else to our daily to-do list can simply feel overwhelming, unless we make it a game. That's why we created a revolutionary self-care app called Enjoy Daily, which makes self-care a game. Why a game? Because games are fun. Games activate different parts of our brain that make us feel alive. Enjoy Daily uses gamification to trick your brain into feeling good while you are forming self-care habits. So it's not only fun, but you end up actually becoming a better you. Using the latest in positive psychology and neuroscience, Enjoy Daily makes sure you wake up inspired, intentionally create your day, practice being grateful, as well as celebrating the small wins you have each day. Some of it's private, some of it you can share with our global community, but either way, the more self-care acts you do, the more points you earn. And the more points you earn, the higher your chances to win some awesome prizes. And even more importantly, to have your best day every day. Bottom line, the best way to take your self-care seriously is to make it a game. So make yourself the priority you deserve to be and download the Enjoy Daily app today. And now, back to the podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Fayetto. And if you're serious about your own personal growth and creating a life you truly love, this is the podcast for you. Enjoy Success is dedicated to bringing you the most holistically successful people on the planet, not only to inspire you with their own stories, but to share their secrets on how you can literally create the life of your dreams. So make sure to subscribe to the channel so you never miss any of our episodes. Now, before I introduce our guest today, let me ask you a question. Have you ever had a major disruption in your life? Have you ever had a financial or other personal setback? Or have you struggled with any of the steep challenges this global pandemic has brought with it? The truth is, we all have. Challenges are part of life. But what if I told you there was a proven way to minimize the negative impact of all of these kinds of life events? And what if I told you that I'm interviewing one of the authors of a book that shares a lifetime of wisdom around getting through just such situations? My guest today is Khan Apostolopoulos. Khan is the co-author of possibly the most timely book ever written, 7 Keys to Navigating a Crisis, a practical guide for emotionally dealing with pandemics and other disasters. He is a sought-after speaker and award-winning coach, as well as the CEO and founder of Fresh Biz Solutions, a human capital management consulting group that provides performance improvement and training solutions to help organizations develop their people, improve business results, and reap the benefits of a comprehensive talent management strategy. He's delivered hundreds of workshops and events for leaders in North America and Europe. He's been featured on CBS, ABC, NBC, and Fox, and is a regular contributor to Thrive Global and Achievers Engagement blog. And today he's going to share a little bit of his own story, as well as some of the secrets he's learned along the way to not only help all of us navigate the most challenging situations in our lives, but to move into actually creating the life we desire. It's an absolute honor to have him with us today. Khan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. It's an honor and a privilege to be here with you.
So great to have you. And we'd like to jump right in. Can you please define success in your words?
Wow. Way to start off easy for me. Okay. Success. The way that I define success, it's an intrinsic feeling. It's a sense of fulfillment. It's a sense of satisfaction. The feeling that you get when you achieve an important goal. When I look at it on a deeper, more meaningful way, let me start off with a quote to answer that part. The two most important days in your life are the day you come into this world and the day you realize why. When you find your purpose, when you find what it is that you're here to do, and you live that purpose, you've succeeded. So in my mind, that's the holy grail that we are all seeking. How can we align our purpose with living that purpose and being able to make that contribution?
So beautiful and so eloquently said. And I want everyone to get a sense of the purpose that you have. Can you share just a little bit around just your purpose? Why are you here?
The reason why I'm here, I discovered, is that because I have this desire, this drive to learn, I realized from a very early age that everything in my life has geared me towards becoming a coach, a teacher, somebody who shares information, somebody who connects the dots for other people. And it's not necessarily that I'm the most educated or the most knowledgeable about something, but I'm the one that typically asks the dumb questions that gets people thinking, that allows them to discover what's in them, what they're seeking, what's important to them. And that's at the heart of it, what a good coach, a good teacher does. They use a discovery process for themselves and for others to be able to discover what it is that is their purpose and what's meaningful to them, what matters most to them. So in looking back in all my life, I can connect the dots that same way. I can look at all of the different careers, the different events in my life, everything that got me here. And the common denominator is that being a teacher, being a coach.
It's beautiful. Can you take us back a little bit into just how that your early experiences kind of started to help shape that, or where you start to get sense of the path that you were on?
Sure. Let me add a little bit of context to that. My story is the immigrant story in many ways. I am first generation here in the United States. I've been here 24 years. My beautiful wife is from here, and we decided that this was going to be our home. But I wasn't born here. I wasn't even raised here in my early years. I was originally born in Australia to immigrants there. Immigrants that worked hard and at some point returned back to Greece, which is my native land, where I consider that. And that's where I was raised and grew up in a certain culture, a certain mindset about how life should be and how I would approach that. As the firstborn, I've always been thrust into that situation, and any firstborn can tell you they're forced to be teachers of their younger siblings all the time. And throughout my career, throughout my life, my jobs have always gravitated me, or I've always gravitated towards those opportunities within my work. When I was in the military, I was an instructor. When I went to my early corporate jobs, I was always in some sort of an instructional role, whether as a leader teaching the people that I was leading or in other capacities. When I went and got my degree in performing arts, I pursued a degree in performing arts, but not just to do it, but actually to teach it. So to me, I've always found that fulfilling. And that's why when I look back, the common denominator has always been that.
I love that. And can you share a little bit? I find that juxtaposed in terms of all the teaching you do, the performing arts as a background. Can you share a little bit of that desire for going into that as a major, and what drew you into that?
Well, that probably links beautifully back to what you would define as success. I realized that at some point in my life, I had the desire to be on stage and to perform. And to me, motion was the big part. So I studied dance, and I studied to be in the classical dance forms and more contemporary stuff as well. But what I learned very, very quickly is that my ability to connect with an audience, my ability to communicate even without words and tell a story and be able to send a message or create a feeling in my audience was a very, very powerful thing. Coupled with the need to become creative or to become expressive from that piece, that was a natural fit for me. I mean, I remember the first time I made the choice to become professional in the art was when we were doing a dress rehearsal the night before. And it's in an ancient theater in my hometown in Patras, Greece. And you look around and the structure is thousands of years old. And we are sitting there, a bunch of kids, in an environment where we're sweaty, we're tired, it's almost midnight, the lights are being dimmed, the wind is kind of blowing through the amphitheater and the trees around it. And I looked around and I just had a sense of happiness, a deep sense of happiness and satisfaction that I knew that this is where I belonged at the time. And that kept me going for as long as it did. I was well over a decade, 12 years almost in the field. And I did a lot of stage and a lot of TV productions in that sense. But at some point, you know, even at when I reached that peak, I wanted to know what's next. And at some point you make that transition, your body no longer is able to carry you to operate at that high level. So you look for the next thing. And to me, that transition has always been part of what I'm looking for. I'm never satisfied from that piece. I know that there's going to be something next. Complacency is not a good place to be. There is no growth in our comfort zone. The only way we grow is by stretching, by reaching, by going beyond what that comfort zone is.
You know, a lot of people speak about this, you know, getting out of our comfort zone, but I think it's worth just the way that you just explained that. For me, for example, being comfortable, like I really thought that was the end game. Like once I was successful, there'd be less challenges, less problems, less, it would just be easier. And it wasn't until it was quite a while before I realized that wasn't what I wanted. That wasn't what the soul actually wanted. It was more of the elements that you're just speaking to that really what makes us come alive is this idea or this environment of being able to grow, of being able to be challenged. And even as you described being at that amphitheater as a young man, the group of you were tired. Like this wasn't super easy. It wasn't like it was just a walk. It was hard work. And yet you knew in that moment still when we're on purpose, there's something about like there's a transcendent element of that. And could you speak a little bit just again, because I think just really clarifying, we hear getting out of our comfort zone, but this idea of being on purpose, this idea of being in growth, no matter what age we are, feels like a very important quality to success.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, I liken it to the feeling that you have when you are, when you're going with the current of a river, when you're flowing with that current, when you are, if you're ever out on a sailboat and you feel the sail filling up with the wind behind you and it's pushing you in a certain direction and it's the direction you want to go. And perhaps you need to adjust a little bit with the rudder here and there. But you know what that feeling is because you've got that tailwind that's pushing you in that. That's what it feels like when you're on purpose, when you're working there. For many people, they distinguish, you can work hard. When you are working hard on something that you're passionate about or something that's your purpose, it doesn't feel like work. You have this sense of satisfaction. And if anything, it's invigorating. You can be exhausted, but it is invigorating. All you want to do is get up and do it all over again. When you are working hard in an area where you're not passionate or you're off purpose, you're not where you're supposed to be, that's stress. That's labor intensive in a way that you are pushing up against a headwind and it just feels like you're making no progress whatsoever. But to me, I would challenge people. That's part of what that self-awareness piece is all about. It's about asking that question, am I where I'm supposed to be in this moment? And if you are, even if it's not exactly on purpose, if I say, you know what, I'm in a situation where I have to do a job because I need to cover the basics for my family right now. Maybe I'm not doing what I'm passionate about, but can I find passion in what I'm doing? Can I find a meaning in what I'm doing in such a way that I can bring it closer to my purpose?
That's beautiful. And I think you speak eloquently in the book, obviously, but also on your website for your company around values. And part of this, as that we're just touching on also, when people, a lot of people are searching for their purpose or, you know, haven't found it or still refining it. But a lot of the people we talk to, and I think you're just hitting on something here, is there's a framework, a mindset that goes into no matter where we are, to as we're figuring it out, as we're going on our own journey. And one of those is, if we're not in the space, just still finding purpose in whatever it is that we're doing. Can you just speak a little bit to the importance of either mindset being or values if they're connected?
Yeah, absolutely. And they are. Values are essentially an expression of what's important to me. I mean, at the heart of it, that's what it is. When I challenge people that I coach, for example, I actually approach the values question from the opposite end, because most people will gravitate towards the popular choices that we all know and appreciate. But when it comes to the individual, the unique nature of who we are, I ask people two simple questions. Same way, I would say, Jeff, what is it that really upsets you about other people's behavior? What is it that somebody else does that really upsets you? That's question number one. Question number two is, when do you feel guilty? What behavior or activity triggers guilt inside you? Now, these are very strong emotional reactions to things. They are almost visceral. And in many ways, it gets to the heart of what's important to us, because when people or we ourselves tread on something that's important to us, we know. We know. And that's, to me, I found probably the best way to get at the heart of what your true values are. Now, when you're living with those, you don't have those negative feelings. When you are consistent with your values, you are starting from a place of abundance, of wholeness, of being centered. You are your authentic self. When you are able to bring what's inside you out and your behavior reflects those values, you are your authentic self. When you are your authentic self, you are inviting the world to see you for who you are, and you are at your best. And that's what people need to realize about that piece. Put your best self out there. As my dear friend, my brother, my co-author of the book, Dr. Ilya Grigoryev, says, success and happiness are interlinked, but not necessarily in the way people think. It's not that successful people are happy because of their success. No. It's the other way. You flip that around. The happiness needs to come first. You're successful because you're happy. And what you do is your authentic self coming out and shining for the rest of the world to see. And people notice that. They see that, because you can find success in simply walking up the stairs. I can guarantee you, anybody that's recovered from a physical limitation, when I had my knee surgery, for example, and I couldn't walk and I was on crutches for 10 weeks, that first step that I took on my own, that first full step was a success. I could have run a marathon and not felt that level of satisfaction. So for all of us, we need to define that and understand it. What makes us happy, because that will reflect success.
Beautiful. And, you know, again, coming back to the book and the fact that we're in one of the weirdest world situations, global situations that most of us have ever experienced. We're in a global pandemic, you know, and you've written a practical guide to navigating that. And one of, again, I want to give you a little room to kind of expand on this, but this idea of us being our authentic self, is it possible even in the midst of something as ridiculous as a global pandemic?
The answer is yes, the short answer. The long answer is, let's break this down a little bit. When you think about a crisis, the term crisis has its origins in the Greek language. And my ancestors felt that a crisis is essentially a test or a judgment by the gods on them. Something that they had to acknowledge, accept, overcome, surpass. That's what a crisis is. And for many of us, a crisis is that we didn't expect it. We didn't necessarily see it coming. It's something that negatively impacts our safety, our security, our well-being, whatever the case might be. That's why it has such a strong connotation for us. Now, for most of us, our capacity to deal with change in general, or a crisis more specifically, is kind of like a sponge. Depending on your life experiences, some people have a greater capacity for that change, a bigger sponge, if you will, than others. Personally, I've lived on 3 continents and been to 4 and traveled across the world. I feel comfortable enough being dropped in the middle of anywhere, and I can find my way. But that's a certain level of confidence that I have because of my capacity to deal with change. However, that doesn't apply to everybody. So what we try to do is expand that and strengthen that sponge up for ourselves, grow it. In this case, look at what we're dealing with. Most of us could probably deal with just the pandemic, but you're dealing with the after effects of that. So you've got a global pandemic that has touched every single human being on this planet. Okay? There's nowhere in this world, essentially, that you can say, quote unquote, it's safe. It touches everybody. You look at now a situation where the financial insecurity in this country, from the forced pause to deal with this pandemic now, is escalating there. You've got millions of people that are unemployed or underemployed right now, or even just fear about what's going to happen tomorrow. That compounds the problem. Then you have people out in the streets protesting, voicing their concerns about certain things, about the racial, about the socioeconomical injustices out there. So what are we dealing with? 1918, 1929, 1968, all in 1 year. Now, you add on to that the fact that we were already in a mental health crisis before the pandemic. We were struggling to figure out how addiction is playing into this, how people are suffering and trying to find meaning. We were talking about mindfulness in January. We were talking about how do we get back to that better self of ours and deal with the mental health. Well, guess what? There is 1 billion, with a B, people all over the world reporting increased mental health issues. These are not chronic issues. These are issues based on anxiety, stress, depression, pandemic fatigue, and everything else that goes with the uncertainty of the times. If you're living in California, you're just still trying to recover from the ash in front of your house or your house being burnt down. If you're in Florida, you're dreading the next hurricane. If you're in the Midwest, you're thinking, is it tornado season yet? You add all of these things that impact mass populations, you can see why we are where we are. We have elections coming up. Whatever your position is on those things, it's still a stressful time. Now, that doesn't have to be the case all the time. For each one of us, a crisis could be very different. It could be the loss of a loved one. It could be a change in your life. My daughter is one of this 2020 graduating class that had to deal with the crisis of not knowing if she's even going to have a graduation or what that looks like, not knowing what her freshman year in college might be. She has a reason to be upset. Yeah. She has a reason to feel bad. My beautiful young sister just gave birth to triplets across the globe in the middle of this pandemic. She could have seen it as a crisis, and it could have been. So for each one of us, it's a very, very personal thing. And part of the reason why we wrote the book, to be honest with you, Jeff, is to help people on an individual level, to give them not scientific, not highbrow, not PhD views, not statistics, but a person-to-person sense of, hey, how are you doing? Here's some advice. Here's what might help you. We all talk about resilience. Well, it's easy to talk about, but how do you get there? Well, we've laid out seven keys, seven steps to get you to that resilience point, to bring hope back into your life. And the seven keys to navigating a crisis lays it out in very simple terms, very easy to consume ways of saying, here it is. You want to get there? Here it is. Here are the seven keys.
And not to go all the way into the book, but could we talk about one of them? Could you choose one of the keys and just give us a little glimpse into how practical and how it's laid out for our ability to implement?
Sure. Let me give you a quick overview so kind of people can understand what we're talking about when we talk about a journey. The journey starts with self-reflection, if you will. It starts with self-care. For even for those that are predisposed, as a parent, for example, your concern is for your kids, your family to reach out. We all have that feeling. But you're no use to them if you're not well yourself. You cannot hope to reach out and pick somebody up if you're not on solid footing yourself. So the journey starts with that self-care and giving yourself permission to feel that whole peace. And it progresses from there to really understanding that awareness and being able to discern, what am I experiencing right now? What's happening? What's changing? What's not changing, just as importantly, in my life? And being aware of those things and assessing that impact. For different people, this situation has impacted them differently. If you're in a major, major urban area, you may have seen big freezer trucks and body bags being rolled out of hospitals. If you're in a more rural area, maybe you didn't experience that, but all of a sudden your economy is shut down. So you experience the aftermath of these crises very, very differently. So it's an awareness piece of getting there. The one where I think is very, very important for us to look at is the flexibility. In the book, we talk about a parable, if you will. And we talk about the story. When I coach people, for example, I ask them, how would you relate yourself as a leader? Would you see yourself as an oak tree or a palm tree? Most leaders have that. They'll pump their chest out. They'll say, I'm an oak tree. And here's why. Big, immovable, sturdy, consistent, powerful. That's kind of how we envision a big oak tree, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Been there forever, stability. Well, guess what? In the middle of a hurricane and a storm, that same strength that characterizes that oak tree is its downfall. Because as that wind is blowing, as the rain is saturating the ground, it breaks limbs. It can even topple over that huge oak tree because its strength and its weight are its downfall because it has no flexibility. For anybody that lives in a coastal area with palm trees can attest, you can see a palm tree even in a category 4 or 5 hurricane, go all the way down. And when the storm is over, it comes straight back up. Darwin said, it's not the strong that will survive. It's the adaptable and the flexible. This requires us to be flexible and adaptable right now, to be able to understand what's happening here. We are in a transition, if you will, Jeff. And I'm going to step away from the book a little bit and kind of give people a sense of this. Transitions have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's important for people to understand that. What they don't realize, though, that the whole transition process starts with the ending. It's the ending of the way things were. It's the ending of what we knew before, our quote-unquote normal. Now, for most of us, we go through a grieving process. For anybody that knows even what it's like to be in a bad relationship, when you break up, you still have this pang of grief. You feel disappointed. You feel sadness, even though it's for the better. So in a situation like this, do you miss the two-hour commutes? Because I don't. Do you miss getting on a plane every week and missing your family? I don't. There are things right now that we're leaving behind that are for the better. But we still have to go through that grieving process, the anger, the denial, the depression, the anxiety, until we get to that acceptance. And once we do, now we're in that middle stage. And in that middle stage, we are free falling. We're not here. We're not there. We are free falling. And what we need to be able to do is accept the fact that we're free falling. Embrace the child in you that used to jump off that rock into the water. And for that split second, you are a superhero. You have ability to fly. And if we can embrace that wonder about things, we can get through this intermediate stage where we can give ourselves permission to be less than perfect, to experiment with certain things, to even take risks with what we want to do. For a business owner, that might be, how can I deliver things differently to my clients? I can guarantee you, during the last crisis in 08 with the financial meltdown, if you remember, Airbnb and Uber didn't exist before that. They were a product of those times, of the after piece of that. You look at that situation, wouldn't you have loved to got stock in Zoom before this crisis?
Yeah.
So you look at that, each crisis at the same time has its benefit on the other side. Anybody that's been to Hawaii can see what it looks like after the lava cools down and how green and lush the land is and how creative that process can be. The same process that is very destructive. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to be coy or cute with the fact that 210,000 of our citizens have died. That's not what I'm intending to do. But we need to look at that situation and say, for all of us here, what can we do from that? What do we need to celebrate? How do we move forward from that and embrace that so more people don't have to die? And then ultimately we get to that next normal, because that's what it is. It's a next normal, and then there's going to be another next normal after that and another next normal after that. But once we land there, be prepared to move forward. And that's what we talk about in the book. Be prepared and then take action. Start taking action individually and with others, because the minute you start taking action is the minute you start regaining some control.
Can we talk a little bit about taking action? I mean, I think a lot of times, and I love the angle that you guys are taking in terms of the book, isn't the PhD highbrow kind of theoretical stance, but rather practical, doable, mm-hmm. What can help people right now? What is an example of some actions that we can take, or even in the free fall, or as we start to come out the other side?
Sure. Human beings are not meant to be living in ambiguity for long times. And that's what we're dealing with. So taking action means creating some structure, creating some ownership about this stuff. What can I do to create some healthy routines? Okay, I'm going to go out. What can I control? I can take my dogs for a walk around the park and spend 30 minutes outside in a situation in a safe way where now I'm taking control of that. I own that. I can create a list of my to-dos. I can start looking at different things that I can do, the smallest things that I can start taking ownership. I can choose to turn the TV off because I'm done with all the negativity. These are things that I can take control of, small things in my life that I can control. Okay? And some of it I do individually, and some of it I might do together. My family and I choose every evening. We get together after dinner. We start doing puzzles. We play games with music. We put different music on that, and we play different games that kind of get us going and connecting. We unplug and we're able to kind of sit there and enjoy each other's company. For that hour or two, we are in full control of our world. That gives me a sense of peace, a sense of honestly being able to be back in control. It gives me the strength I need to deal with the uncertainty beyond my walls.
You know what that reminds me of, as you spoke earlier about being our authentic self and getting into a space of, I don't know if it's control, but being able to come from the inside, like being able to lead with what our values, what's most important to us inside. I have a 5-year-old and family is very important to me, but this idea that you take an hour-ish every night to play games, and that's not something that we need a lot of money for. Like that's not something you can, you know, one game and the whole family can play, and being with them in that way, that's been one of the big silver lining things for me during this, is we're sheltering in place with my in-laws, who we saw previously, they were, but not in this way, like being with them. My wife is Chinese American. And so, and we play Mahjong as a family almost, and my 5-year-old plays with us. And it's like that kind of family time we just simply wouldn't have done before this. We wouldn't have. And I'm just wondering if you're noticing also like a reprioritizing, or people realizing what's really important, the real richness in life can come from simpler things, can come from being present or taking control of a small window of our day and doing something that we enjoy with people we love.
Yeah. So go back to your question that you asked me, and I'll paraphrase it a little bit differently. What the crisis has taught us is what matters most to us. Hmm. Because once we were deprived of those things, we realized how important they were to us. When you weren't all of a sudden able to get in your car and go wherever you wanted to, or just get up and go whenever you wanted to, all of a sudden, even your freedom or your things that you were taking for granted were taken away from you, all of a sudden you appreciated them that much more. That's why I ask people those conflicting questions. What really upsets you about certain things? Yeah. And now you discover those and you realize what really, really matters to me. And now, quite honestly, I think we can expect people, those of us that embrace the better side of us in that piece, because the crisis can also bring out the worst in the people. But I think that the way we choose, and long term, I think this will be a better place. I'm very, very encouraged by my daughter's generation, the younger generations now that are coming in with your kids. I have hope, because I think that they will come out on the other side really having a great awareness of what really matters.
I love that. I have heard now, I've had a chance to interview several people, and the level of optimism and the message of hope for the future is undeniable. And as I listen to that, I also can't help but be swept into the picture that you all paint of what's possible. Can you say just a little bit more of what you see in terms of this younger generation, or just coming out of this, what might be possible?
Sure. Look at how the word community has changed and how we've approached that. The crisis, among other things, is accelerating what we call the fourth industrial revolution. Things that were going to be happening steadily over the next decade have happened a lot quicker. We are now in a situation where our communities are rapidly changing and evolving from that piece. This generation now is being challenged to create a growth mindset, a mindset that's able to kind of look at things very multidimensionally. When I work with leaders right now, especially young emerging leaders from this perspective, I talk to them about the leadership paradox. And the leadership paradox in many ways is the ability to synthesize what are likely conflicting ideas, if you will, on the surface, and bring them together in a different way. If you now are a leader, for example, that is dealing with a dispersed workforce, you sent your employees home to work remotely, what does that mean for you? It means that on one hand, you have to be empathetic to the fact that you have an employee that is dealing with a 5-year-old, like you said, that's climbing all over them during a Zoom call, or that, you know what, they can't really get to their work until 10 o'clock at night when they put the kids to bed. We have to have that level of empathy as leaders. But on the other hand, we have to share with them and we have to show them tough love almost as a parent, because many of these workers, the ones that don't have kids, for example, especially, are burning themselves out and they need boundaries and structure. So you take two very conflicting ideas and you bring them and synthesize them together. Here's another example. Right now, you and I might as well be in the same room because we are in the same virtual room. So we're operating in a very high-tech environment, but we are also required to be high-touch. What you and I are sharing right now are very personal, very about our vulnerability, about our history, about who we are. So high-tech and high human touch at the same time. As a leader, I need to engage with my dispersed workforce very differently. I need to make sure I have more touch points. And at some point, I have to close that proverbial door and reach over to them and say, how are you really doing? Tell me how you're really doing. Is everything okay with the family? What can I do to help? So high tech, high touch. Our communities, like I said, I could be working. I work with clients all over the globe now. The only thing that limits us is our time zones and our ability to operate in them. So I work across there digitally, but I source locally. A lot of my resources, the things that I get, are local here. So I need to be able to operate in that world. For many people, that's the same thing. For many businesses, they're able to transfer data across borders, but they can't necessarily do the same with goods. So they need to operate in a different way. So for all of those business leaders out there that are struggling right now looking for answers, there are answers. The same thing that applies to the individual, Jeff, the same seven keys can be then extrapolated and pulled out. The last key, and I'll just emphasize that one, outside of the positive attitude, that strength of mind, is kindness. Well, kindness to an individual means going beyond yourself and reaching out to a loved one, to a neighbor, and saying, hey, how you doing? Is there something I can help? If you can't get to the store, can I do it for you? If you can't do this, can I help? That kindness, the simple kindness, the minute you start thinking about somebody else, you get out of your own head. There's no self-pity in kind people. And the minute you start giving, in the same breath you receive that satisfaction. You talked about success. That's what it looks like when you are able to change somebody's life or impact somebody's life in a very meaningful way to them, not even to you, but to them. But at a corporate level, what does kindness mean really? It means, are you being kind with your employees? Are you understanding and empathetic with that? Are you being understanding and kind to your customers, to your community? How can you help? If all of a sudden you have those resources that you can't utilize another way, why don't you put them to good use? Employees, customers, partners, all remember the way that we handle ourselves. This is the time where we show our true self, the true values, our authentic self. And if these are the things that I believe in and they're not just statements up on the wall, now's the time for me to show it.
You know, all too often we use that quite a bit, as well as, you know, a company, most companies have really nice value statements, and most of the time it just ends up being a very nice plaque on the wall. But this idea of living from them, whether it's a corporation, an organization, or individually, that we are actually living in a time of crisis, who we show up as, like the impact that can have on others in this moment of a little kindness, going a little bit above and beyond, being a little bit more flexible, whatever the quality of the gift is that we're giving, we do remember that, right? We do remember someone who goes, because right now it's present. We're aware that everyone's going through something. So the fact that someone else is doing something that is clearly to help us or to support us really goes in deep. Like, that's what I hear. Am I getting that?
Oh, absolutely. And it means so much more to people right now, because everybody knows that we're strapped. Everybody's working in a deficit from that perspective. Nobody has this huge abundance all of a sudden. Everybody's giving from their own emotional savings right now. You know, and it's hard for people. A lot of times people say, well, will you expect me to help somebody else when I'm struggling right now? Yeah, that's exactly what I'm expecting you to do, because that's the way that you're going to feel better. If we come from a place of abundance in our lives, in our professional situations, it changes your mindset. That mindset is very, very different. I mean, the way we react to change, Jeff, is very, there are certain archetypes. There are certain very predictable ways that we can react to that. And I'll give you an example. We've identified four of them even in the book. And in all of my change management work that I do with companies, I help them understand that sometimes when change is thrust upon us, we react as a victim. Like I told you, my daughter, 2020 graduate, she could have been a victim. Yeah. She could have sat there and moped, says, why did this happen to me? Why can't I go to prom? Why can't I have my graduation? Why is this world conspiring on me? I've waited 12 years to get here. And now all of a sudden I can't do it. We've all experienced that. Anybody that had kids in that age group knows what I'm talking about. But you know what? She didn't. And part of it was because she understood. She gathered the information. She got what she needed to kind of get out of that funk. And she had her moments. We all do. I did. When COVID hit and we shut down in mid-March, all of a sudden, a lot of my speaking engagements, a lot of my classes, my workshops were canceled because people were uncertain about what to do. So I could have sat there, and I did feel, for moments, I did feel like a victim. Another typical response might be a critic. When you are, instead of feeling passive or pained about that, all of a sudden now you get aggressive. Now you start criticizing everything. You know, somebody comes out, you know, the leadership comes out and says, you know what, Jeff, I need you to wear a mask. And you go, what? That's stupid. That doesn't help. You know, you can't tell me that this thing was going to help. well, Jeff, you know what? We're going to have an environment where we don't use masks. And now all of a sudden, Jeff says, well, hold on a minute. Are you trying to kill me? So now, no matter what, all you're offering is critique. But part of it is we react that way because we don't feel like we have a place, a say in the matter. We feel out of control. So reclaiming some of that, being able to contribute to the solutions helps with that. The third typical response might be that the deer in the headlights, or the bystander, as we call it. The people that now passively are looking at it saying, I'm not sure what to do here. I have no idea. I'm going to wait till Jeff does his thing, and I'm going to see if he survives it. I'm going to go in and I'm going to do it too. So now all of a sudden we're waiting for somebody else. We think somebody else is more qualified to do this than we are. You know what? Chances are you're probably just as qualified as everybody else. So being able to summon the courage or to reach out to another human being might snap you out of that. Or having to take care of a family member might snap you out of that bystander mode. Because ultimately where we want to get to is that fourth archetype, the fourth mode, and that is the mode of the navigator. And the navigator isn't somebody necessarily that has all the answers, but is somebody who's willing to look at those answers, somebody who's willing to draw from experiences of life of the past, who can recognize the landscape and say, okay, this looks a little bit familiar. It's kind of like, I see this financial thing is same thing as we went through in 08. Okay, I know what to do now. And they start taking steps individually with others. They are open to understanding how they feel, but also how other people might feel about this. And then, you know what? Some people might not be in a navigator mode. Accept that and embrace that and help them get there. And you know what? At the end of the day, all four of those types exist in each one of us. And we go through that cycle. And even if I start off as a navigator today in the morning, by nighttime, I may feel like a victim because maybe I'm a little tired. Maybe I haven't had any support from that. Maybe I'm a little run down. And that's okay. Understand that that's normal. That's acceptable. What's not acceptable is just giving up.
I love that. Can you share a little bit about how you personally or things you've seen work on a daily basis, little habits or practices, anything that, you know, as we're going through any of these four stages or trying to spend more time as a navigator, are there things that we can do just to build those muscles on a daily basis that you've used or recommend for us to sure. try?
Yeah. And a lot of it is, like I said, it's filling in the gaps. I mean, typically when you have a non-productive response to a situation, it's because something's missing. And you want to find that equilibrium, that balance again. You want to find out what's missing. So it starts with assessing where I'm at. Okay, if I'm crabby, if I'm all of a sudden a critic, all of a sudden I'm criticizing everything, what's missing? Okay, maybe I'm tired. Maybe I need to take, you know what? Maybe I'm going to step away. I'm going to step outside into the sunshine, take five deep breaths, think about what I might be grateful for. All of a sudden, I'm going to go in and I'm going to start looking for things that I like. Things that I agree with rather than things that I disagree. I'm switching my mindset purposefully to try to catch people doing the right thing as opposed to catching them doing the wrong thing. And all of a sudden, I fake it till I make it. That switch in mindset has the effect that sometimes the behavior will then trigger the emotion as opposed to the emotion triggering the behavior. And it's our way now of tricking our mind and our body and our hormones to think differently. I'll give you a classic example that I do in the classroom for anybody listening to us. Take a pen or a pencil and just put it between your teeth. You do that for 10 seconds, your entire body chemistry changes because your muscles are generating a different chemical response in your brain and your body. And not to mention that if you're doing that with other people, you look so ridiculous that everybody starts laughing. And that's something that we need a lot more of. We need to every now and again just go out and do a big old belly laugh.
Yeah.
And get back to reality. Those are little things that we do. I mean, if I'm feeling like a victim, I can guarantee you, of everybody that's listening to us, 99% are probably worse than I am. No matter how bad my situation is, 99% of the population that's listening to me right now is probably, there's going to be people out there that are going to be worse than me. Okay. So, I want people to understand that, you know what, no matter what, you're entitled to feel bad about your situation. I'm not diminishing that at all. But understand that, you know what, you're entitled to that, but there could be somebody that could be worse. If that's the case, go out and help somebody. Do something for somebody else, and all of a sudden that snaps you out of that victim mode. Even if it's just helping your spouse with carrying the groceries from the store, helping your kids solve a math problem. You know what? Letting that dog out that needs to get outside and go to the bathroom. Whatever it is, help somebody else. Figure something else that you can do for another person. It'll take you out of your own head. If you're a bystander and you're in that bad place, find one thing that you feel that you can do. Step outside there, do one thing. Gain confidence from that and understand that journey starts with one step.
I love it. All those are very, I really like this idea of just figuring out one thing we can do for someone else. I think no matter where we are, everyone listening, you know, today, just challenging ourselves to answer the question, what's one thing I can do to be of service, to be helpful, to be kind to someone right around me, and just see how that plays out. Like, see what your mind goes about coming up with, because it may be something very, very small. But if you're thinking about that, what I hear you saying, Khan, is if I start thinking about that, no matter how small it is, now I'm not thinking about me and my problems and my issues. I've all of a sudden switched. My mindset is now different, and it's in a much more productive, something that I can control. I can actually do something. And now I can start to either feel more power. I can start to feel like I'm sharing my love. And all of that's moving me back into more of who I authentically and naturally want to be. Am I getting that?
Absolutely. And that's exactly it. People try to solve world hunger. That's not what you need to solve. You need to start with one simple thing, and we get there. And you sometimes, you know what, as you're going along, others will join you for the journey. And then it becomes a collective effort, and it becomes a very different thing. And that's the part that we all need to understand and acknowledge. Do what you can. Don't let perfection get in the way of progress. I work with little kids all the time. Part of the reason why I go by the moniker Coach Khan is not just because I coach executives, but because I coach youth soccer. And because in many ways, my way of giving back in a meaningful way, especially, is working with these young kids and teaching them life skills that then they can take with them throughout the rest of their life, their leadership skills. And it's a situation where kids are very authentic. We have a saying in Greece that if you want to learn the truth, ask a kid or a crazy person. They will tell you. And it's one of those situations where kids are very authentic. They haven't learned how to play games as much. And the lessons that you can teach a kid will impact so many more people in their lives. And especially with young girls, when we work with that, because young women need to go into this, we need to support them as much as we can as they go into that. As a father of a daughter, to me, I know that firsthand, how powerful that can be. So when I work with the kids, I work with them because I love the sport, because I love to teach, and I love working with kids from that perspective. And that to me is the generation that I see coming through. You ask me why I'm so optimistic. I see it every day. You talk about success. My kids feel like champions before they win their first medal. And they play like champions because they're happy, because they're fulfilled, because they know that they're doing something in a team environment where they can excel. They can feel they're part of something bigger. They're happy with that. And to me, that's where the success comes from. And that's where they become champions in my book and everybody else's. The fact that the rest of the world acknowledges them, the fact that they get a medal, is cherry on top of the cake. But if that's the reason why you're doing it, you will never be successful. And you will never be happy because it's depending on somebody else and not you. Go back to what you can control, your mindset. Allow yourself to reward yourself intrinsically from that piece. Find that purpose, live that purpose, and you will be successful because you know what? You're not going to need anybody else to tell you that you're successful.
Beautiful. I love the reminder. I think whether we're coaching or just parents, you know, and have kids around, for all the parents listening too, but you also use that reference, that analogy for business leaders, that treating our teams as family and being, as a leader, being a good parent, cultivating that environment for people to really grow and shine and be their best selves as we would want for our own children. And so this idea, I just love that you actually do that in the real world, coaching the young ones and mentoring them and teaching life lessons and all those things. But we can all do that, whether we're parents, whether we're leaders and working with our teams. But this idea of being able to give and create an environment for someone else to thrive, or for someone else to feel loved, or to feel like they're seen or listened to or checked in on, whatever it is, those gifts. And you spoke, because it also reminded me, you said, when we come from abundance, and I made a little note that I think a lot of us hear abundance and we immediately think financial. It gets paired pretty quickly as abundant money. But abundance, as I've heard you speak about it consistently over the last hour, is in kindness, is in being authentic, living a values-led life, you know, being on purpose and having a mission. Like all of these things, what I love about that is it doesn't really matter what the external world is saying for us to choose to live from an abundant place for any of those things. And I wanted to have you react to that because I noted that down. I wanted to circle back to it, but I just really think it's an important note that you keep reiterating our ability to be abundant, and it's never had anything to do with money.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. Because if you look for that validation externally, if you are looking for material things in many ways, it's never going to be enough. Because you know what? There's always going to be another dollar to make. There's always going to be a bigger house, a faster car, whatever the case might be. If you compare yourself to that, you will always find that you are coming short and you'll be disappointed, or you're going to become arrogant because you're comparing yourself to somebody who seemingly has less. That's not a good place to be. That's not our best authentic self.
Beautiful. As we head into a little bit of the home stretch here, Khan, where can people get more of you?
The best way to find me, I would say, as a one place is LinkedIn under Coach Khan. And I spell Khan with a K. It's hard to tell people to trust you when you spell it with a C. So Coach Khan on LinkedIn or on my website, where I have a lot of this information there as well. www.freshbizsolutions.com.
Beautiful. And the book is 7 Keys to Navigating a Crisis, available on Amazon and everywhere that people get books. I just got mine on Amazon. So wherever you want to get your copy. But in a minute, I'm going to ask you if you have any final words for our audience. But I want to just not only to thank you for being here, but thank you for who you're being in the world right now. We all need more navigators, as we kind of spoke about, and people who have the wisdom, who have been, you know, have lived and have garnered this wisdom and insight that they can see things and know that they're, what I love is this, that crisis has a, there's a process. And I had never heard, it's not like the end is where we started, that we're starting from, where we go through grief of what we just lost as the end of that. I mean, these are things that, again, any one of these new concepts, as people, you know, as you guys are listening to this, trying one of these on, like there's several. I'm going to show you, Khan, I took pages of notes. I don't know if you saw me writing here, but this was as fast as I could possibly write, because there's so much wisdom in the last hour that if all of you just try on one thing, just take one concept that Coach Khan has shared and really try it on. Just see, for me, I could just feel like, oh, that feels lighter. That feels like, wow, that shifts how I look at that completely. Like I would way rather be living from what Coach Khan just shared than where I was. And that's what's possible by listening to great coaches and working with great coaches, and obviously reading and listening to them as well. So I just want to thank you for who you're being in the world, especially now. We just need more people like you, and you're doing it so eloquently and so powerfully and so generously. So thank you for all of that. Do you have any final words for our audience?
Final words, final famous words. Okay. For me, be yourself, be your best self, be kind to yourself, and then be kind to others and allow that to flow. We all need a little bit more kindness and patience and a little bit more laughter in the world.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you for who you're being. And to all of you listening, thank you so much for always tuning in. I'm Jeff Baeto, your host, reminding you that you are awesome and that the world is a better place with you in it, and that you are absolutely designed to be enjoying success. Thank you, and we'll see you again next week. Thank you for tuning in, and remember to connect with us on LinkedIn and Facebook at Enjoy Global. Or if you are interested in transforming your culture and would like to have an exploratory call of how Enjoy Global could help your organization, please visit our website at enjoyglobal.com. InjoyGlobal.com, and schedule a demo or free culture assessment discovery call. I'm Jeff Baeto, reminding you that you can indeed enjoy success.